If you have your Bibles, we will be in Matthew chapter 7 this morning. Matthew chapter 7. We're going to walk through verses 1 through 12. I'm going to give it a shot, 1 through 12. We might get stuck at verse 6, but that's okay. 1 through 12. We're walking through what we call the Sermon on the Mount. It's this Jesus' teaching, this amazing teaching about what flourishing in life looks like. Everybody has a notion of what the good life would be. And Jesus is explaining to his followers, those who are following him, he's giving this teaching of what it looks like to live the good life. That's what the Sermon on the Mount is what it means to flourish in life in light of the fact that the kingdom is coming, right? It's a big deal. He says, in light of the fact that the things that God values, he says this in his prayer, right? Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. In light of the fact that the kingdom that he talks about, where God's will is done, that is indeed coming because of his arrival and will one day happen for sure. In light of that, this is what it means to live a flourishing life. And that's what the teaching is, how to be in this world. And he started with this really kind of really mind-blowing claim. And what he claimed was this, that if you were going to be a part of this kingdom, you need what he calls a greater righteousness. And he points to the Pharisees, the very professional holy men of the day, and says, if you want to be part of this kingdom, you have to have a greater righteousness than them. These are the men who are, by all appearances, look to be very blessed by God. They're wealthy, they're powerful. They look to be very, very successful. And not only that, by every external appearance, to be very good human beings. They care for the poor. They give away part of their money. If they have an herb garden in the backyard, they give part of that to the church, the synagogue. They didn't have a church then, but you know what I'm saying. So they give part of even that. They give part of that away. They are great. They stand and give amazing prayers. And these fishermen, these poor fishermen, these poor people, farmers and herders are hearing this, and Jesus is saying, you have to have a greater righteousness than them if you want to be part of this kingdom. But what he's saying is not a raising of the bar. Like, you got to be even, like, you have to try even harder than them, because that's not good news. What he's saying is the greater righteousness is something completely different. What he's going to go on and teach is that you have to be a completely different person than you are right now. You need a whole new heart. Because even though their outside looks right, their inside is broken. Maybe they've managed to control their behavior, but their heart is what needs to be changed. And he goes on to begin to teach about that. About the greater righteousness is not us controlling our behavior so that we don't murder, but being the type of human beings that don't even have anger in our heart that leads to murder. The greater righteousness is not just not committing adultery. The greater righteousness is not having lust in our heart that would lead to committing adultery. We have to be different people from the inside out, is what he's claiming. And he goes on to teach what it looks like to be in the world this way, living with this greater righteousness, what it looks like to be a member of this society, what it means to be with other people, the greater righteousness and with regard to our enemies and loving them, a greater righteousness, what it means to deal with the possessions of the world, the things that you have. And then he gets to this section and he says that you need a greater righteousness in how you deal with the world. Because what he has said to his believers is, if you follow me, you will be persecuted. You're going to find yourself in this weird place if you follow me. They're going to love you. They're going to love you because the world's going to love you because you're going to care for the poor. They're going to love you because you're going to forgive. They're also going to hate you because you're going to insist that there is a right and a wrong. You're going to find this weird place where they both love you and hate you in the world. And you will be persecuted if you follow me. They persecute me, they're definitely going to persecute you. And so if you're going to, how to be in the world, how I'm going to function in this world when I'm dealing with the world is what he moves into now. When you're dealing with the world, how are you supposed to be? What does this greater righteousness, this being a different person, this different human being mean in light of that? Because we're going to be living in a world that's very different than what you believe. It believes a different thing, it acts a different way. Have you ever, I don't know if you ever had the chance or been had to travel out of the country. If you're travel out of the country, maybe to like, if you get down to like this South America or somewhere, you can always pick out the Americans in the airport. I mean, Americans just, man, they're Americans wherever they're at. It doesn't matter, like, and they demand things, and they're loud. You can be like, Americans, probably from Texas. Like, you can just tell. Like, there's loud and big and everything. They have too much stuff. We can just tell Americans. When you're in a foreign land, Americans don't do a great job of blending in We don't do a really good job of that. But he's saying, you're going to live in this world. You're going to stand out. So what do you do when you're in a foreign land? When you're in a foreign world that has a completely different worldview with you, how do you interact with them? So we're going to go through three of the kind of the really popular, kind of famous teachings of Jesus. And then all the way down, hopefully, to the golden rule. And it's about how we're going to live and interact with a world that loves us and hates us, followers of Jesus. Chapter 7, verse 1 says this: judge not that you be not judged. For with the judgment that you pronounce, you will be judged. And with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. Why do you see the speck that's in your brother's eye, but do not notice the log that is in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, let me take the speck out of your eye, when there's a log in your own eye? You hypocrite. First, take the log out of your own eye, and then you'll see clearly to take the speck out of your brother's eye. Do not give dogs what is holy, and do not throw your pearls before pigs, lest they trample them underfoot and turn to attack you. Ask, and it will be given to you. Seek, and you will find. Knock, and it will be opened to you. For everyone who asks receives. And the one who seeks finds. And to the one who knocks, it will be opened. Or which of you, if he has son, asks him for, if his son asks him for bread, will give him a stone? Or if he asks him for a fish, will give him a serpent? If you then, who are evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father who is in heaven give good things to those who ask him? So whatever you wish that others would do to you, do also to them. For this is the law and the prophets. Oh my goodness, there's so much in there. Let's go. We're going to do this though. So much, it's so good, right? So here's the, we have to start, if we're going to live in the world, how do we interact with the things of the world? And this verse, 7, 1 and 2, probably is the most, might be the most quoted verse in America these days. Don't judge me. We say that all the time, right? Don't judge me. I say it all the time. I think at nights, I'm sitting there covering Cheez-Its things, don't judge me. I think it in my head, even though you're not there doing it, but I know you're somewhere judging me for covering me covered in Cheez-Its and gummies. It's not even good stuff. It's what I could find at 10:30 at night. And we think that. Don't judge me. And people say it all the time. It becomes, it's again, a very American thing. How dare you tell me how I'm supposed to live my life? That is kind of the great morality of America is, don't tell anybody else that what they're doing is wrong. Don't make judgments on what anyone else is doing. But here's the problem. I really don't think that's what this is saying at all. I really think that we've misunderstood it. Because, first of all, the word judge here, in America, when we use it now, kind of modern, what we mean is condemn, right? Don't you think badly of me because of what I'm doing. Don't condemn my behavior. Who are you to tell me that I can't do this thing? We only think of that side of judge, when really what judge means here is to weigh and decide. It's about evaluating and discerning properly and fairly. And so what it's saying is, when you discern, when you effectively judge, when you effectively, when you evaluate and discern properly, make sure that you're doing it with a fair scale. That's what he's saying here. I think at one level, there's just proverbial wisdom here, right? This is wisdom literature that he's using. He's just giving you wise advice. Hey, man, don't hold people to a standard that you can't live up to. That's just good advice. Don't hold people. Like, I would hate, let's say that somehow Jesus appears to you and says, hey, here's the deal. I'll trade all of these things that you're struggling with, all the things that I've promised you, and this, here's the deal. You can make up your own standard, and when you get to heaven, you'll be judged by it. I don't want that. I can't live up to my own expectations for my 8-year-old. Like what I expect of him, hey, why are you upset about this? As if I don't get upset about the dumbest thing in the world. I can't live up to the expectations I have for a child, much less the expectations I hold everybody else to. I am very bad at this. I don't want that. And so what he's saying here is just this great piece of wisdom, this great piece of advice for how to live life. The way that we live, the way that we think, the way that we are, that affects our experience of others and of God. And he says that we're going to be judged by our own standard. But I also think there's a little bit more going on here. I also think that what he's saying is that we have to be able to discern what is right. Like in our lives, as we're living, we have to be able to discern what is right and wrong. That there's a way that we can go That we can meet people in the world. And there's two things, the two great errors that we can fall into. And one of them is to apply a religious standard to them. And to unthinkingly apply a standard to them that we would never even be able to accomplish. We meet someone that maybe you know someone who's not a believer. And you say, I don't understand why this person behaves like this. And we just kind of dismiss them and hold them at a distance and judge their heart based on their behavior. And just hold some kind of moralistic standard up to people and go, hey, I just don't do that. Is there a way for you to not be that way? Right? And we hold some kind of religious standard up to people. And what it allows us to do is to keep them at a distance. The other thing that we can possibly do is to fail to evaluate right and wrong properly. To fail to think about it. To fail to be involved. To fail to hold up that there is a right and wrong in this world. Right, to fail to say that, again, it keeps people at a distance. So I think what we have here in this text is Jesus giving us a really great question for how to interact with the world. And I think this is the question that we can ask ourselves to get at this. It's this: do you care about the person? Right? Because I cannot care about them and apply some kind of moral standard. When they live up to this, then they'll be okay. And I judge poorly. Or I can say, hey, you know what? It's not for me to judge. That's not my place in the world. I'm just going to let them be. And you're failing to discern properly what is right and good. And failing to share it. And I think that what he's saying is, when we interact with the world, what we can ask ourselves is, do I care and enter into the broken places of the world no matter the cost? The hurt places, the places that need to know what's right and wrong. Because if there is a right and a wrong, if there is an objective standard of loving Christ, if there is a truth that he will come again, then how much hate is it to not tell people that? How much are we abandoning them if we don't step in and go, the reason you're hurting is because you're missing this thing at your core? And to press in and to evaluate well what is good and right. That's what this is calling us to, I think. Not to stand off and not to cast aspersions, but to enter into their life and care for them and love them. And to help them see right and wrong well. And that leads straight into his example about how to do this. His example is really kind of hilarious, right? Why do you see the specks in your brother's eye when you don't notice that the fact that you have a log in your own eye, right? It's a hilarious image, right, that Jesus gives. He's quite the jokester, Jesus. So he's saying, why do you do this? Why would you be about taking the speck, what's going on in their life, and dealing with that when you don't even notice it in your own life? I think that, well, this is clearly about self-awareness. If we are not self-aware, our relationships are going to be very, very difficult. And when we aren't self-aware, what happens is we don't listen well to others, and we don't listen to God well, and we don't see him rightly, and we can't share him well. And so we are so busy, consumed. It's so easy to see in other people's eye, isn't it, instead of our own? Oh, have you ever met someone who complained about other people who complained all the time? Man, dude, that's my favorite. Or people who are always angry complaining about people who are always angry? Oh, man, that happens all the time. You know why? Because the sin and brokenness in us, we really hate in other people. It's really weird that way. I remember complaining about a guy one time. I was like, I can't stand that dude. Why? Man, every time you're somewhere, he's always got to tell the funniest story. He's always got to be the center of attention. He's got to be the guy up front that everybody's listening to. He's so arrogant and condescending. And I was like, uh-oh. That might be me. Like, I might be upset that I don't like being around him because I'm not the center of attention when he's around. And I'm not the one. Like, it's like, uh-oh, that might be me. We're just broken that way. We're broken when we aren't self-reflective. We don't look at who we are and our behaviors and evaluate them effectively. And that is going to cause great damage in relationships when we go to help people and we don't know who we are ourselves. We don't step in and say, hey, you really don't need to complain like you do. Complaining is hurting you when we are giant complainers. We need to deal with who we are first. Now, what it doesn't say is don't ever try to help your brother out. If somebody's got something in their eye, if someone doesn't see, they have a blind spot in their life, if there's a sin and a brokenness, that's fine. Just leave it in their eye. No. That's not what it says at all. We want to engage and help our brothers because we have blind spots. And I need a community that comes around me and says, hey, here's the deal. The reason you don't like that guy is because you also are a giant jerk. We need people that separate, but lovingly. Lovingly. But we need people in our lives that because we have these blind spots, that come to us prayerfully and reach into our lives and say, hey, listen, man, I think there's some things that you're not seeing. There's a goodness and a truth that you're not seeing. You're not evaluating well. And if I could, let me help. And not just with our brothers, but with the world. How are we supposed to step into a world and tell them that there's a right and wrong and love them and point them to Christ when our life is so full of hypocrisy? And by hypocrisy, I mean that we don't live out of the core of who we are. That we haven't been changed internally and we're just trying to control our external things. It's difficult for us to see our own brokenness, but that's what we're called to do, is to be aware, to look at Christ. See, that's the thing that we have to do. To know who we are, we have to be in that relationship with Jesus and knowing Him and loving Him well. Because when we see who He is, it becomes a whole lot easier to see who we are and where we fall short. And that's what He's calling. I think the question that He's saying here, the thing that we can ask ourselves as we're trying to navigate life and our relationship with people is, how am I like you? How am I like you? So often I'll be talking with someone, and whatever it is, somebody's coming to me and says, hey, listen, there's this thing going on in my life, and I'm dealing and struggling with this issue, whatever the issue is, doesn't matter. But it's an issue that I don't understand. I don't understand how you, that's not a thing that I struggle with, a thing that you're struggling with. And they'll go into how they're struggling and what's going on. And I begin to wonder, I don't understand. I told you not to do the thing and you keep doing the thing. Why do you keep doing the thing I told you not to do? And I begin to get frustrated sometimes. And then all of a sudden I stop and I think about it. How am I like this person? And you know what I've always found? There's always some way that I'm very much like them. And here's how usually how it is. We all, at our core, our brokenness, we all want Jesus and something else. I want Jesus and I want to make all the money that keeps me very comfortable and safe. I want Jesus and I need to be married. I want Jesus and I need this thing to be fixed. I want Jesus and this. There's always a Jesus and. And so when I'm dealing with someone, I'm like, I don't understand your brokenness. I'm always like, oh, wait. Oh, you want Jesus and that other thing too. My bad, me too. There's a Jesus and in my life. I want Jesus and to be able to control every single thing that happens in my life. I want Jesus and to be sovereign. It's ridiculous, I know. It's not your and, it's mine. You have yours. We have this other thing. I want Jesus in control. I want Jesus and this. I want Jesus and that. And I would do what He says as long as He doesn't ask me to do anything about that. But He does. And so when we enter into this, that's what it's talking about, removing the log from our own eye, going, how am I like this person? What is the thing that they are longing for? What is the thing that they want? What is their desire? Do I have that desire too? Do I need to deal with that in my own life? And that's what He's calling us to do. How do I to care about them? And as we figure out if we care about them, to ask before we enter into kind of helping them, am I like you in any way? And then verse 6, which is crazy complicated, and no one really has a consensus about what it means. There's no consensus about what it means. But you know what? We're going to do it anyway. It says this, do not give to dogs what is holy, and do not throw your pearls before pigs, lest they trample them underfoot and turn to attack you. It's a hard thing. It's a really weird thing that He says here. It's hard to understand. I think that we can assume, it's easy to assume that Jesus is preaching this, the people that heard it would have understood it. They would have said, oh, yeah, well, we know what He's talking about. He's using a reference that we all know, but we don't know what it is. And so as we kind of study this and try to figure it out, some people think that he's simply referring to, hey, like, don't give yourself to things that are bad. It's a reasonable interpretation. It doesn't really make sense where it sits in the verse, though, in the chapter. Some people think that it's talking about, hey, man, if people aren't nice to you, don't worry about it. Don't waste your time with them. Just move on. That doesn't sound right to me either. Although there's time that, you know, how much you're going to give. I don't think that's it either. I think it's a little more nuanced. I think what's going on here is that Jesus is talking about how do we care well for people. I think what he's saying is that we really need to stop expecting unbelievers to act like Christians and damaging people with the gospel, towards the gospel. Here's what I mean by that. Pigs have no use for pearls. It's not that pearls aren't valuable. They're just not valuable to pigs, right? Does that make sense? Dogs don't want pearls. They can't eat them. They can't trade them for bones. They don't want them. There's no good to them. And so when we take what is holy, what is good, what is valuable, and he says, cast it before pigs and swans, I think what he's saying is that we have to stop holding up some kind of standard, holding up some kind of external standard, and saying, I don't understand why you don't just act like this. Take the thing that we hold as a believer valuable and look at the world and go, I don't understand why you're not just doing this. I told you to do this. Why aren't you doing it? And we take a thing that they can't digest and wonder why they attack us. We come at them and go, well, you just need Jesus. You ever heard that? You just need Jesus. I don't know what's wrong with you. I know what's wrong with him. He just needs Jesus. And we just come at them hard. And it might be true, but we so often use it as a derogatory thing, right? Like, well, this person is just so broken that, you know what? I'm just going to write them off and they need Jesus. And we go, you know what you need to do? You just need to take the Bible and read it. And we've thrown pearls before someone who can't take them. Well, they can't digest it. I think what's really going on here is that he's telling us, how do we enter into people's lives to teach and care for them well? Because what he wants, what he longs, is for us to all be different than we are. Before Jesus found us, that's all we are. Before Jesus takes us and changes us, we live like animals. This feels good, this hurts. I'm not going to do the thing that hurts, I'm going to do the thing that feels good. Why else would you live any other way? Jesus comes and says, hey, I have a different value system for you. Don't do like that. Don't be like that. Be what you were created to be. Be more human. And if we just take this and say, I don't understand why you're not living this way, and don't enter into their life and meet people where they are and say, you know what? The thing that you really need, the way that you're hurting, the way you're broken, let me talk you through this. And we don't just throw the Bible at them and say, you know what? Get right. That's not it, man. I think all of this leads us into having to enter into people's life and care for them, to not bludgeoning them with the gospel, to know how to love them and give them what they need when they need it. And this is the message that we're supposed to take to them. Ask and it will be given to you. Seek and you will find. Knock and it will be opened to you. For everyone who asks receives, and the one who seeks finds, and the one who knocks it will be opened. This is good news. If you are looking for what the thing that you're looking for in food, the thing that you're looking for in your career, the thing that you're looking for even in family, the thing that you're looking for to satisfy you here, it's not what you need. What you need is a father that loves you, that cares for you, that provides for you, that meets all these needs. And the good news is that he has promised that when we seek, you'll find. He's promised that when you come for him and you knock, that he'll answer the door every single time and invite you in. That's the good news that we're supposed to carry. And we're supposed to know that the Father knows how to give good things. If we know how to give our children good things, surely God in heaven knows how to give us good things. And then he sums it up this way. Isn't this a great summary? So whatever you wish that others would do to you, do also to them, for this is the law and the prophets. I think this is how this section ends. This is the end of the middle part of the Sermon on the Mount, and he ends it with this great summary. Whatever you wish that others would do to you, do also to them. This is what I think he's saying. I need you to think and I need you to love. Right? Like, I don't have to think very hard how to care for my own self. That just comes naturally to me. I do it badly. But it's just natural for me to think about myself all the time. And he says, I need you to think about what your neighbor needs. I need you to stop and think about what your neighbor needs and then do whatever it takes to love them well. To go to them and to enter into their world, to enter into the sty and give them what they need to bring them out. To enter into the brokenness and not try to take the thing out of their eye, but to love them with the thing in their eye while you get the thing out of your eye, and then you can help them. To enter into people's lives and not hold them at a distance and judging them and saying, this person can't ever be right, or hold them, it's not my position to enter into their life and judge, but to judge fairly and enter into their lives and to think about what they need, how to love them well, and then to seek their flourishing in life. Your flourishing is tied to the flourishing of them, of seeking their good. Jesus came and gave us life that we might be different human beings, and now we're to lead other human beings to him. but it requires being in their lives. It requires entering in and being thoughtful and being careful. It requires more than saying, here, just do this. Also, find a church. Good luck. It's more than that. What he's called us to do is to be incarnational, to be his presence in the world, to be his arms and his feet on this planet, to bring people to him so that they might know his love that you know if you are his follower. And this leaves us with something for us all to do, to evaluate our relationships, to evaluate where we are. Do we know Jesus? To evaluate whether we are bringing people to Jesus? Are we entering into people's love? It leaves us all with questions to ask, because we all have coworkers, we all have family members, we all have people that we all interact with the world every single day. And Jesus has given us amazing wisdom to enter in, to care for them, to love them, to bring them to him. This is how he's called us to be in the world. Because of who he is, because he did this, because he came and died that we might have life, because he came and suffered that we might live, because he did these things, he's saying, yeah, follow me. You do those things. You enter into people's lives that they might know life. You enter into their lives and suffer the brokenness and the hurt and the suffering and the pain so that they might see the light. That's the call. That's what he said. That's how we're supposed to. This is the greater righteousness with the world. Let's pray. Father, it's amazing that this is true, that you have explained to us what the greater righteousness looks like with the world. To love people as you have loved them, to enter into the pain and suffering of this world, the brokenness and the hurt, that they might know you. Give us the strength, give us the wisdom, and give us the ability to know them, to love them. Help us to see that this dying to ourself is really flourishing. That when we crush the selfishness in our hearts to enter into the hurting of other people's lives, that you bless us. That this is flourishing. That this is what you've called us to. It's in Jesus' name we pray.